Yes, that is a trend that we are seeing, that we've seen a lot of our restaurants who are now coming and asking that you create a beer just specifically for us. So basically what will happen is it's actually good for the consumer. So basically the consumer will get to try different beers at different restaurants, and that beer will not be available anywhere else. So it actually works to the restaurant's advantage also. Like for example, I've created a beer, say for a particular restaurant. I mean, as a consumer, you love that beer. So now if you want to drink that beer, you have to only go to that restaurant. So in fact, it's a way of increasing the restaurant's revenue as well. And it indirectly benefits the brewery as well, because more the restaurant sells, the more benefit the brewery gets.
Welcome to another episode of the Indian Dream Podcast, and thanks for listening. In this episode, we speak to Pranav Mehra, founder of Brewale, a craft beer brewing company based out of Bombay. I'm a big fan of good beer and could not resist doing a few episodes about the changing environment in the beer and alcohol industry in India. Craft beer has become a huge industry in the US and in Europe, and when you go to a grocery store there, you will see a number of beers from small breweries. This is not what you will see in India. With the advent of microbreweries in Maharashtra in the early 2010s, and with Dulali at the forefront of this change, the entire beer industry in India has seen a radical shift. Young people like me have many more options to drink a casual beer rather than just Kingfisher. However, the biggest hurdle holding back the shift in the alcohol industry in India is regulation. Government regulations hold back this industry at every turn, whether it is manufacturing, distribution, or marketing. In this episode with Pranav, we explore how he first conceptualized the idea of building a beer brand in such a tightly regulated market, how he executed it, and what he thinks is the future for this market. There were a few things that really shocked me through this conversation. Number one, you have to build your entire brewery before you can even apply for a manufacturing license. And building this brewery is not cheap. It can be as much as 1 crore to build it. Number two, distribution is also a big hurdle, where you have to apply for a license for every restaurant with whom you want to partner. Personally, I think regulations are both good and bad for the entrepreneurs that work in this industry. They're bad because they make your everyday life so much harder. However, it's good because it dissuades people like me from even thinking about entering such a tightly regulated business. The laws are changing and the winds are shifting. The alcohol industry in India is going to look very different 10 years from now. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and as usual, we have a newsletter that goes into detail on the craft alcohol space in India. You can click on the link in the show notes to read that newsletter. Hey Pranav, thanks so much for joining us today. So for all our listeners, Pranav is the co-founder of Brewale. Brewale is a craft brewing company and they make some fantastic beer. You should check it out. In fact, they had sent me a couple of bottles for my birthday. I think it was a stout and an IPA, and it definitely made my birthday a little better. Thanks so much for sending it to me, guys. And Pranav, let's just start off for our listeners. Can you just tell us what is the difference between commercial and craft beer?
Thanks, Sahil and Siddharth, for giving Brewale this opportunity to be part of this podcast. So basically, the main difference would be on the size of brewing. So craft beer is basically brewed in small batches. It's hand-picked ingredients. You go and buy a burger from McDonald's, or you go and eat a burger at a gourmet restaurant where they hand-pick it. It's slow-grilled and all of that. And when we talk about the advantages that we have over the commercial beers is we can get direct feedback from the customers, and any feedback that we receive, we can immediately execute it. Like for example, we find like a certain batch, the bitterness has gone up or the flavor profile is slightly lesser. We can immediately add more flavor profile in the next batch. We can do small batches. We can do different experimental brews. Like now we know the winter season is coming up. We can experiment with winter fruits like strawberries, mulberries, and all the other berries that are available in the summer season. We can experiment with different fruits like mangoes. Basically, the entire industry is all about experimentation and as well as having your standard beers. So basically, it's not that we only brew experimental beers. We have our standard beers like your regular wit beers, your regular lagers, stouts, and IPAs. But we can also brew them with different flavor profiles, as I just mentioned.
Just a quick question. What's been your favorite experimental beer till now that you've made?
Actually, it would be our apple and cinnamon cider. So it was basically, we've tried a lot of ciders in India as well as through our travels abroad. But we felt like most of the apple ciders we felt were like more like apple juice, and it lacked a lot of flavor. So what we decided is we said, let's brew something different. So we, in fact, we tied up with these people from Himachal, where we actually got fresh apple extract. And through that, we added a touch of cinnamon to it. So it actually became an apple cinnamon cider.
So Pranav, you're clearly very passionate about brewing and very passionate about beer. So can you just tell me that journey that got you and your co-founder to start Brewing?
It's actually a pretty funny journey. It's Vedant and me, I go back a long way. We were school friends and we've always wanted to do something in the F&B industry. So it was over basically a couple of, like, we always thought, okay, let's do something. And just one night we both were out drinking together, drinking a lot of beer. And we were like, why not? Why not let's just start our own brew and start making our own beer? So it was just a night out that both of us were together, and it was like a eureka moment, which gave to the birth of Brewale.
Okay, fantastic. So you guys got the idea to make this company while you guys were drinking beer one day. So how did you go about to make this a reality? What were the steps that you took?
At the time when we both decided that we would want to start Brewale, Vedant was into his family business. I was doing a job at an IT company. Now we just a eureka moment. So we had to get into the thing of what are the regulations for getting into this industry? What would be the kind of setup that we would have to get? What are the kind of returns? So we did a complete analysis. That analysis took us around 3 to 4 months, which convinced us that yes, we want to get into this and it is a viable business to get into. So post that, Vedant quit his family business. I quit my job. And through that, I think it took us around 3 to 6 months more to get Brewale actually up and running. Those basically 9 months was all our research period on what kind of beers do actually the Indian market like, what kind of experimentations are other breweries doing, and how are the restaurants being responsive to craft beers, because we all know the commercial beers have flooded the market, and they are much more cheaper, and they've the kind of offers that they give to restaurants. So we just wanted to understand how are restaurants also responsive to craft beers, what are the barriers to entry in getting into a restaurant and all. So that 6 months period was a research period for us, and post that we decided and we launched Brewale.
So Pranav, I have a quick question. I want to understand the entire value chain when it comes to, you said the commercial wheels were, you know, populating the restaurant space. I want to understand the value chain from manufacturing. We'll get to the manufacturing part later, but from manufacturing, from a distribution channel perspective, if you have to sell to consumers, how are commercial beers sold to consumers versus how is a craft beer sold to consumer? Is there a difference in the supply chain itself?
Yes, there was a difference in the supply chain till about July of this year. So I'll tell you how we used to originally run pre-pandemic and how we now run post-pandemic. So in the pre-pandemic era, it was basically since we are craft beers and we are only allowed to sell to restaurants directly. Basically, we were never allowed to sell to the consumer. So it was always a brewery, that is a craft brewery, selling to the restaurant, and the restaurant would further sell it down to the customer in glasses. So the basic way was we would sell our 20-liter kegs to the restaurants, and the restaurants would further sell it ahead to their restaurant, to their customers. But that was a disadvantage for us because we could only sell to restaurants, and there are just a certain amount of restaurants who would actually accept craft beers. And there's a huge competition in this space with the number of craft brewers that are now coming up. Through the pandemic, the entire association, there's a craft beers association. The entire association had a lot of rounds of discussion with the government and said that, hey, listen, this pandemic is there to last. We will be out of business if you do not give us a way out. So the way out that was found during the pandemic was growlers. Through growlers, we could sell directly to our customers. The way you could sell your growlers directly to your customers was two ways. Either you could sell it through your existing restaurants, or you could set up your own growler stations. If you would talk in government terms, or for a layman language, it's just like setting up a beer and a wine shop. But for us, it is setting up a nice station where we can fill our beers into growlers of 1 liter, 2 liters, and up to 5 liters, and sell it directly to the customers. So there has been a change. These growlers have definitely improved our business. It has also given us an opportunity to now get direct feedback from the customers. Because what used to happen earlier was, it was always the feedback was being taken by the restaurant, and the restaurant would pass us the feedback. And usually restaurants, keeping in their interest in mind, would not always pass on the correct feedback. I'm again not saying all restaurants would do that, but we found that some of the restaurants would always do that. But now, since we can get direct feedback from the customers, we know exactly what customers like, what is the flavor profile they like, what are the kind of beers that they would like to try in the future, to what level are they open to experimentation of styles, experimentation of flavors and all. So this has given the industry as a whole an opportunity to understand the market further and to grow the industry the way it's actually been growing in the West. I mean, craft beers, if you go in the West, in America, in UK, in Europe, the market is just completely different. Through this, at least now we are seeing that people are actually accepting it, and we are now being able to experiment with different flavors and getting the direct feedback from the customers.
This is basically what one would call a direct-to-consumer model, where you are selling directly to the consumer. And that has always advantages that A, your margins are better because you don't have to pay the restaurant the margin. And B, like you mentioned, you know your customer so much better. But I imagine customer acquisition in this model for your growlers must be quite difficult. But one question that I have is that, one, let's say the restaurants open again and they're, you know, back to full capacity. Do you imagine yourself going back to that model one day? Or are you happy with the way your direct-to-consumer model is working right now?
So I would say that both models will work hand in hand in the future. I would definitely continue doing our restaurant supplies and all, because ideally, being in the space that we are in, the alcohol space, we are not allowed to market, do direct advertising to our customers. So the only way that customers can ideally get to know about our brand is through restaurants. So it's not that we will stop doing business with the restaurants. We will continue doing business with the restaurants. This will just be an added revenue towards our business. So it will be basically a different sales channel for our business.
So quick question, Pranav. When you say growler stations, these are physical spots that you have to now create in order to sell the growlers, right?
Exactly. They're basically like your wine shops on your main streets. So like, basically, how do we identify where do we want to set up a growler station? So usually it is basically, we say it's basically like a shop. So what are your modalities that you would think before you open a shop somewhere? So it would ideally be that you want it on a main road, you want it front facing, and you would see where it's close to a market, and you have people who would actually come and buy and visit your shop and buy. Because even right now, even though delivery of alcohol is allowed, it is not that it's going to be, we are still not sure whether it's going to be allowed permanently. It has just been allowed in the pandemic. And even the government notification that has come out for it, is it just says that alcohol delivery is only allowed till the pandemic is there. So we don't know how it's going to be post-pandemic. So that's why when we set up growler stations, we have to set up in such areas and places where we know it's easily accessible for people to actually come and pick up from there.
As an outsider, then, hasn't the economics of the business completely changed? Because I'm assuming these rental costs that are now, in order to set up the growler station, you have to set up a shop which will come with its own rental costs, which needs to be now baked into the entire economics of it, right? And are these growler shops independent? Like, is it just for Brewvale, or are these growler shops sort of aggregators where there are multiple craft beers that are being sold? What is it like?
So currently, as per the current laws, it's only for a particular brewery. So it's, in our case, it would only be particularly for Brewvale. But there is some happenings you can have one growler station and you can have multiple breweries supplying from there. So we don't know whether that will be allowed yet or no. But currently it is that you can only supply, like, for example, Brewvale has to set up a Brewvale growler station and they can only sell Brewvale beer from there.
And how many of those do you have right now?
So we currently have one which we are servicing entire Bombay through, but we have plans to open at least a couple of more by January of next year. And by the end of the financial year, we expect to have at least three growler stations of Brewvale in Mumbai. And post that, next year, we plan to expand to different cities like Pune, Nagpur, Nasik, different cities in Maharashtra as well. And depending on the response, how the response in Bombay has been and how the market is going, we'll probably look to expand more in Mumbai as well.
Okay. So really quick question. Are you guys getting a lot of footfall right now? Because I...
And are you allowed to make a non-customer facing growler station where it's just kind of like a cloud kitchen, like a cloud growler station? Is that allowed?
That is currently allowed, but ideally it would not make sense for someone to do that, because if, for example, delivery, like the, it can just be one day that delivery is stopped. So if you have create like a cloud kitchen and alcohol delivery is stopped, how would someone know that you are there in this particular space? How will someone get any visibility about your shop and all, since we are not allowed to do direct advertisement that we can advertise that we are in this particular area of Mumbai? How will someone come to know that where the person is? So ideally a cloud kitchen model would have made sense if the notification from the government had come that alcohol delivery is here to stay.
Yeah, I think that brings us to a bigger question that every entrepreneur who wants to get into the alcohol industry thinks about, is the fact that the regulations are extremely complicated and something that sort of keeps changing, right? I've also read the fact that, you know, for you guys, you're currently operating in Bombay, so you have to deal with regulations only in Bombay. But as you expand, regulations in different cities, states, whatnot are completely different, which makes the industry very hard to navigate. Can you help us understand the current set of regulations on a high level on what do you need to sort of get approvals for before you start a business like this?
Yeah, and all the licenses that I'm sure that you had to take before you guys started selling.
Sure. So I'll talk about first the licenses required to set up your own brewery, and then I'll get into it for a growler station. So basically, when you say you want to set up your brewery, the brewery licensing and navigating your entire red tape and all roughly takes anywhere between 1.5 to 2.5, 3 years just to get your brewery license up and running. And the main catch in that is it's not that the time period taken to get your license. The point is you have to make your entire investment for your brewery before you apply for your license. So basically, you made your entire investment, And you're just sitting, waiting, hoping one day you'll get your license. So basically, it's you set up your brewery, then you wait roughly 1.5 to 2.5 years to just get your brewery license. And getting the license is not easy. It comes at a high cost associated with it. So you never know, like the amount of investment that you invest a few crores into setting up your own brewery. And then after that, you're just sitting, waiting, one day I'll get my license.
That is so archaic, though. Like It's so archaic in the sense that the unit economics of it is just completely out of whack, because you've set everything up, but you can't really generate any revenue out of it.
And you don't know how long are you going to wait. I mean, sometimes you can get your license in a year. Sometimes it can take 1.5 years. Sometimes it can take 2 years. Sometimes I know people who've taken them to get 3 years to get their license. So you don't know what basis you make your business model.
And like everything in India, I'm sure it comes with, you know, if you have connections, it's easier. If you don't have connections, it's longer and all of that red tape.
Yeah, definitely. You have to navigate a lot of red tape. I wouldn't want to get directly tell you what, I can't directly say what the entire red tape is, but there's definitely a good amount of red tape associated with it.
So what exactly is this first license called?
It's called a BRL license.
Okay, beer and something?
It's only a beer. It's only for craft. It's only a beer license. So you're only allowed to manufacture craft beer at your premises.
Okay. So this is the first license. I'm assuming there's more.
Yeah. Then there's more. Once you set up your brewery, then you would say ideally, okay, there are two models. Once you set up your brewery, either you're going to operate through your own tap room and not supply out to third party restaurants, or you're going to supply to third party restaurants. Now, when it comes to supplying to third party restaurants, now let's say Brewvale set up, Brewvale got their license, they've launched, now they want to expand to different restaurants. Every time I want to expand to a new restaurant, I have to get my name onto their license. So for it's not that a restaurant has a draft beer license. So it's not that they're not allowed to sell draft beer. Once they have the draft beer license, now I have to get an NOC basically from the local excise office that Brewvale is now allowed to supply to them. Now, when I have to get anything done from the government, again, there's a small amount of red tape associated with it. So that takes its own time. Again, it's not a long process. It happens within a week's time. But again, it comes at a cost associated with it. So before I start supplying to any restaurant, I have to again get my restaurant NOC. And I don't even know how long I'm going to be at the restaurant. I mean, I can probably apply for the license, get everything, but probably my product might not do well at the restaurant. The restaurant might not do well. The restaurant might shut down, or the restaurant model changes. I mean, the kind of beers that we are supplying, it might not work for them, or you never own anything. Basically, it's just a blind investment that you have to do to get into any restaurant.
This makes me really question how Bira, they made their distribution so big so fast, and now I really don't understand how they were able to do it that fast.
Again, it's a matter of deep pockets. If you have the pockets, then you have the money and you're okay to spend that kind of money without, you know, basically, again, not directly saying it, but if you want to get something done, if you're ready to pay that extra money and get it done faster, but not everyone has the deep pockets and funding like Bira.
And I think Bira went through its own set of supply chain troubles early in its life.
So, Pranav, are there any other licenses that you need in order to sell?
No, I think this is it when it comes to just to selling through restaurants. Now, when it comes to growler stations, we have to just apply for a wine and beer shoppy license. Once you get that, I mean, that luckily does not take too long. So we had applied for a license in mid of July and we got it by mid September. So it definitely took 2 months, but definitely that was because of the whole COVID situation. A lot of people falling sick at the excise and, you know, a lot of that. So, but I wouldn't say it was a hassle, but it hassle per se to get the license. Once you get your license, you have to just get one basic NOC. That also comes pretty easily within a day or two. And then your growler station is set up and you can have your supplies coming from your brewery to your growler stations.
What if you set up a facility to brew this beer, and let's say you're not doing your own tap room, you're going to go supply to different restaurants. So you've set up this facility and you've gotten all the licenses. What if another person comes up with to you saying that I want to craft, I want to sort of create my own craft alcohol brand. Can you manufacture for me? Is that allowed per regulation?
Yes, that is allowed. So like, for example, today, many restaurants say we have their own brew. Like in Mumbai, you would see that there's a Foo brew. I mean, We are in talks with one of our restaurants where we're going to be giving them also beer and it'll be called as their brew. So what we do is we tie up with different restaurants, and usually when restaurants have multiple outlets across Mumbai, they say that you brew this particular style only for us and it will only be available at their particular restaurant, and then they call it their restaurant brew or whatever name they want to give it.
Got it. So I'm just trying to think the pain that you go through to get that license, how can that be leveraged in a way that other people who want to go through the same route can just come to you instead of waiting 2 years and get the beers, right? And I think restaurants is a perfect example. Nobody's going to go get a license for one of their brews. But with you guys, they get the ability to just create one of their brews.
Right.
I think before the conversation, most of our sort of touch point with the industry was as a consumer, as buying beer either outside at a wine and beer shop or through restaurants, right? But it's very fascinating to understand that there's a supply chain sort of that goes that can customize beers per restaurants now in the future, and I think that's going to become more and more common.
Yes, that is a trend that we are seeing, that we've seen a lot of our restaurants who are now coming and asking that you create a beer just specifically for us. So basically what will happen is it's actually good for the consumer. So basically the consumers will get to try different beers at different restaurants, and that beer will not be available anywhere else. So it actually works for the restaurant's advantage also. Like, for example, I've created a beer, say, for a particular restaurant. I mean, as a consumer, you love that beer. So now if you want to drink that beer, you have to only go to that restaurant. So in fact, it's a way of increasing the restaurant's revenue as well. And it indirectly benefits the brewery as well, because more the restaurant sells, the more benefit the brewery gets.
That's a really interesting point of view. And that's an interesting business model as well. So Pranav, so these are the licenses that you require, but I believe that you guys also face a lot of different regulations in terms of advertisements and other kinds of regulations. Can you just touch upon that really quickly?
So basically, I think everyone is aware that alcohol advertisement per se is not allowed. So basically, even though I'm doing a B2C model directly, I'm not allowed to advertise my products. So the only way of for me to get my beers' names out is basically through word of mouth advertising. Or for example, when someone tries my beer at a particular restaurant and they know it's available in Growlers, they'll probably look to contact me on our website or on the Instagram page or something, and that's how we can get the word spread out. So in fact, it would, like, I mean, we all would hope that at least if we are allowed to do like basic social media advertising with like, you know, some kind of disclaimers like, only like, please follow the page only if you're over 21, or we don't promote alcohol drinking, but these are all our products. You know, like a lot of indirect ways of advertising, if it was just allowed to us, it would benefit the entire industry, and it would definitely in turn help the government also. Because I mean, whether it's regulated or not regulated, people are going to drink. If someone wants to drink alcohol or get a particular brand of beer or get a particular brand of whiskey or vodka, gin or whatever that is, he will find his way out to get it. And he will drink it. If he wants to drink it, he or she want to drink it, they will drink it. So the more the government, I mean, just by putting red tapes at certain points, which have per se no meaning, that's my opinion. I don't want to say that's right or wrong, but that's my personal opinion, is if someone wants something, they will find their way out. If you as a government allow it, it helps generating more jobs, because the more we sell, the more jobs we can get. The more we sell, the more revenue the government gets, and the more we sell per se, it's a direct benefit. I mean, because today it just doesn't allow a black market to happen, because today we all know there's a lot of alcohol black market as well happening. Basically, all of this will or try to be stopped. I mean, I'm not guaranteeing that it'll be stopped, but it's at least you can reduce all of this, is my opinion.
Yeah. So Pranav, I have a business offer for you. So one of the people we recently interviewed was, I don't know if you know this brand called Jiru, and they used to do soda water contract manufacturing. So we will together start a brew ale soda water distribution and that will be your marketing. Does that work for you?
Would love to.
You don't even have to create the actual product, right? I think this happened way back, like when we were growing up. Most of the alcohol advertisements were CDs and soda bottles and whatnot. You don't really have to create it. You may have to create just one batch of it, and you can still go market it.
I thought there's a minimum that you have to sell, right?
Have you ever heard of a Royal Stag, somebody playing the Royal Stag CD? I've never seen that CD in my life.
I've listened to that CD more than anything else in my life. I love Royal Stag CDs. I'm just joking. But one thing that you're saying, that, you know, about advertising not being allowed, etc., etc. So these commercial brewers who are able to spend the money on making these soda bottle, whatever things, and they're able to advertise that. Okay, they're able to sell on a national level. But if you're dependent on word of mouth marketing, word of mouth advertising, that means that you will be kind of restricted to a geography. Correct me if I'm wrong. Do you feel like these, a lot of these craft brewing houses are going to become like hyper-local? Like maybe Brewvale gets really good at Bombay. Maybe somebody gets really good at Bangalore, et cetera, et cetera. Is that something that you've seen in the market?
Definitely. I would even go a step further. I would say it's not even Bombay. It becomes area-wise. Like even in Bombay, there's like a certain brand will eventually be very famous or sell a lot in South Bombay. There'll be some, you know, in different areas of Bombay, that can also happen. Because what we are seeing right now is initially when you start, when everyone starts their own growlership, it's usually your friends and family who help spread the word out for you. And usually people have their friends and family in a city like Bombay in a particular area. So for example, when Brewvale started, we started our own growler station. We saw a lot of orders coming from one particular area only. But then through that, that word of mouth started spreading. Then we started spreading to different geographies in Mumbai itself. So that's how it slowly takes time. And that's how we realize where we need to expand. Like as well as once we see that we're getting a decent amount of orders from this particular area, and it is well accepted, our product is well accepted in that particular side of the city, that's when we would look to open our next growler station in that particular area.
One advantage of not being able to market is your marketing expenses can't go through the roof, right? And marketing is that sort of bucket that you can keep filling. So help me understand the unit economics of a business like this, not in particular to Brewvale, but on a high level, if you can help me understand what are the expenses like and what are the profit margins like in a business like this?
So I would say your profit margins would again depend on what kind of a business model are you doing. So if you're, say, like I've set up my brewery and I'm selling to a tap room, I'm running my own tap room. So I could say your profit margins that could be anywhere between 200% to 300% of your cost price that you're selling at.
This is gross profit, right?
I would say roughly 100% at least.
Okay. So the markup would be about 100%. So you're buying it at, your cost is 100 rupees and you're selling it at 200 around, right?
Let's say, for example, the beer costs you 100 rupees to manufacture. When you're selling it at your own tap room, you're selling it at 300 rupees. But if you're selling it to a restaurant, beer will cost you X, but you're going to sell it to the restaurant at, say, 140 or 150.
So the restaurants have 100% sort of margin on... Oh, actually, the restaurant might even sell it for more than 300, right?
Yes, exactly. The restaurant has their own cost to maintain. They have their own cost of cooling, electricity, manpower, staff, rentals. So basically, they also need to cover all their costs.
Okay. So Pranav, I kind of want to take a step back because this is a question that I really wanted to ask. I have done beer brewing in the past and I know how much fun it is and I know how much, but I also know how difficult it is. It is a very time consuming process that takes about a month totally from start to finish. So how exactly did you guys go about deciding on the flavors that you wanted to do and then experimenting quickly enough to, you know, get to the flavors that now you guys are selling?
So initially when we launched, we had to launch with one wheat beer because the Indian market has their palate suited to a wheat beer. I mean, we either had to start with a Belgian wheat or a Hefeweizen because that is one beer that sells the maximum. So basically what we decided, we would go with one wheat beer, we would go with one lager, and we initially launched with our cider. So we thought we would start with these three beers. Then these were the three that we started with. Then with time, we thought, when Christmas came, we thought, okay, why not? Let's brew something for Christmas. That's how we got the birth of our dark lager.
And this is you experimenting it? Did you have a consultant? Was it just you guys experimenting with the three flavors?
We guys and Vedant, my co-partner, he's the brewer for Brew Ale. So basically we experimented, we thought, okay, you know, this is the kind of flavor profile we would like. Then we experimented with different styles and that's eventually how we got our dark lager. And that was the finished product, which we launched for a festival that we did last year at Phoenix Mills, the World of Christmas. So through that, we got a great response on the beer. Everyone started liking it. We gave it to restaurants. The restaurants loved it. And that's when we got it as a permanent style.
How long were you guys brewing before you officially started the business? How many batches had you guys made?
So I would say so basically we have a pilot plant. So we would like brew small batches, try it. So basically we were very clear. We wanted to only start off with three styles. So we didn't want to overburden ourselves and do too much, chew more than what we can. So we just decided, let's start out with three styles. One would be a wheat beer, one would be a lager, and one would be a cider. So we tried out these experiments. We tried out the ciders that were there in the market. We said, no, we want to do something different. So we thought, why not let's add cinnamon into it. So we did a couple of experiments with it. So I would say it was just one or two batches for each style. And that's when we finalized our complete series of beers.
So you know what? I remember when I moved back to India in around 2012, and I was so disappointed by the beer scene in Bombay. And at around the same time, I think it was in 2014, maybe, or 2015, is when Dulali had opened in Bombay. And that just blew my mind. It was possibly one of the best moments of my life. When Dulali opened in Bombay, I immediately went there. I got the membership and I used that membership thoroughly. But I've definitely noticed the explosion of craft brewing in India over the past, I would say approximately the last 10 years is when the craft brewing industry has exploded. Maybe even less than that. Maybe 6-7 years it's exploded. Why do you think that the craft beer market has exploded in such a way in India? What do you think are the reasons behind this?
I would say it is more today people are more well-traveled. They are okay to spend a slightly more amount if they're getting a fresher product. Because when you drink craft beer, the beers are not pasteurized, they're not filtered, they have no preservatives in it. And also, the more people have traveled, they've realized the benefits of it. They've drank these beers abroad and they know what kind of flavors and what kind of beers that they are missing over here. And that's when we as an association, that's the main aim. It's not like today we don't treat each other as competitors. We treat each other as one family, and we want to educate the people that yes, there's something known as craft beer. It comes at a price, but it's definitely much more healthier. There are no preservatives in it. There are different flavors that you can try. I mean, between, let's take the bottle beers. You have Kingfisher, Heineken, Carlsberg, O'Garden, Budweiser. Those are like very standard beers. There's something much more to it. And that as a market was missing in India. And that's one of the things that we wanted to start Brewville for. That's when like Vedant and me traveled abroad. We've seen so much. We were like, dude, this is something that we want to get this drinking culture in India. We want people to drink beers because they enjoy drinking beer. It's not just like a beer. Like every time you drink, it's not necessary that you have to get drunk. I mean, you can just drink. You can have a couple of beers, just enjoy with friends, have it with food and have it. That was the kind of culture that we wanted to bring to India. And that's why we started Brewville. Most people have started it for this reason.
So what you're basically saying is that there's a cultural shift where people have a little bit more money, they're better traveled, and they just don't want to sit back and drink a Haywards 5000 and just get sloshed. They want to enjoy it with their meals and have a chill time with friends. I'm definitely seeing that more in when you go to a friend's place nowadays. You have a couple of biras or you have that Dulali growler. And you drink a couple of beers. It's different from what it used to be, for sure.
Initially, when this movement happened, it was sort of limited to the metro cities, right? I think it started out of Bangalore and then Bombay with Dulali and then Gurgaon happened. But what I've seen in the last 2 to 3 years is the tier twos, the Jaipur, Ahmedabad, well, not Ahmedabad, Jaipur, Indore, Hyderabad, for that matter, a lot of these are sort of smaller cities are picking up on the whole craft beer culture. And while it's harder to find here, but I'm seeing more and more of that happening. The other day, I was talking to a cousin of mine who lives in Guwahati. They had their first microbrewery open just last week or something like that. So the potential also then seems quite large because in the metro cities, you're competing with a bunch of other sort of options that are out there, restaurants that serve cocktails and stuff like that. But in tier two, the competition is also much easier.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. The Pune market Pune market is more open to craft beers than the Mumbai market. Yeah, the Pune market is in fact doing better than the Bombay market because the people of Pune are more, they're open to trying different stuff. They're open to like craft beer. In fact, it's easier to convince restaurants and all in Pune to serve craft beer than in Mumbai. Definitely the Pune market is slightly more price conscious, but I would say they are more open to trying stuff.
100%, because in Pune, the price of experimentation is much less than the price of experimentation in Bombay, where if you fail, you end up spending so much on real estate in Bombay.
That's true.
I also want to say one more thing that Siddharth tried to sneak in that Indore is a tier 2 city. I don't think Indore is a tier 2 city, Siddharth.
Dude, Indore is a tier 2 city. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Indore is definitely like top 4 tier 2 cities.
I don't know about that. Anyway, sorry about that. This is an inside joke between us. So what do you think is the future of craft brewing in India? Like, where do you think this industry is heading in the next 5-10 years?
I definitely would say this. There's a lot of scope in this industry and the industry is going to grow. So I would say it would require a lot of support from the consumers as well as the restaurants. I mean, we as a craft brewers all together can do a lot, but it all depends how open our restaurants and how open are people to trying our product. Because what happens is usually the big boys, Kingfisher, Budweiser, AB and Bev and all, they all come to restaurants with big budgets. And even Bira, they all come to restaurants with big budgets saying, we'll give you so much of stock, we'll do so much, this like kind of sponsorship deals, price cutting, a lot of offers and all. And that's something that we as craft brewers cannot do, because the cost of our product is high, our margins are low. So basically, we are not able to compete with them at a restaurant level. And usually, most of these big restaurant chains have like signed like yearly contracts with the big boys, whether it's Kingfisher, AB and Bev or Bira. So that is something that if we are able to find a way out for that and we're able to cross that barrier, I would say sky is the limit for the craft brewers there.
What I'm basically hearing is two things. One is customer awareness and the second is distribution. If you're able to figure out these two paths, and the problem is that regulations are thwarting you on both sides. On the customer awareness side, you're not allowed to advertise. And on the distribution side, you have that whole licensing part that's slowing you down while working with restaurants?
I would say it's more of customer awareness. The more customer awareness we have, that it will make the restaurants, like, the more I'm aware about craft beer, the more I will go and ask a restaurant. It will force the restaurants to accept and get more craft beers on board. So basically more about customer awareness. Today it's only when 10 customers go and ask a restaurant, do you have craft beer? And if they say no and I won't drink anything over there, that's when it will pinch the restaurant and they will actually say, okay, yes, we should get some craft beer on board.
At what speed do you think that is happening? Because, I mean, Bira came in and then they were able to go to basically every restaurant in Bombay in no time. At one point, I would have thought Bira was a craft beer, but no longer. Do you feel like this is happening fast enough, or what can be done in order to improve this?
I would say it is happening. I wouldn't say it's happening fast enough. It's happening at a good pace, I would say. But I would say the only way it can hasten up is more customer awareness, because only today it's like a demand and supply. Only if, like for a restaurant also, only if there's a demand and people will continuously go and ask them that, do you have craft beers? Or what kind, like, and tell them that, okay, yeah, you have these three styles, get someone else on board, get more varieties of beers on board. Because if you go to see, you go to a restaurant, you go say whiskeys, they have a list of 10 or 12 whiskeys. You go gins, there's a list of 10 or 12 gins, but when it comes to the beer on the menu, it's just 3 or 4. The more we are able to get more beers at a restaurant, I'm particularly not saying only Brew Whale, like, there's Brew Whale, there are other of the craft beers that are in the market. The more beers you have, the more awareness you have, the more beers you have for everyone's palate. That's when we will see as an industry that we move forward, and we will see the awareness increase, and we will see that, yes, we are now going to the next level.
Yeah, Pranav, I have a question on the fact that, as Sahil pointed out, right, at some point he would have thought Bira was craft, but no more. Is the craft alcohol business in general supposed to be done at a smaller scale where you can be hands-on with the product and, as you said, get customer feedback and stuff like that? Because as soon as you start scaling, you start resembling a lot like a traditional manufacturer, right? Is that, what am I missing here?
Craft beer is supposed to be done like at a particular scale, like again, White Rhino in Delhi, if you take that example, they started off as a craft beer. Their beers are really good. I will not say anything against them, but now they expanded to different cities and they've even expanded to UK, as I think other countries as well. But what happens once you reach that scale, your level of experimentation reduces. You can only particularly do a couple of styles. Basically, you'll either do a wit beer, you'll do a lager, you'll do a stout, or you'll do a cider. Your level of experimentation reduces. I mean, you can't brew a strawberry lager at that kind of scale.
100%. So that's my question. Is White Rhino, according, and I love the beer, by the way, I love White Rhino. Is White Rhino still a craft beer?
The beer is a craft beer, but as per that terminology of experimentation and all of that, they would not fall under that category. But the beer is craft beer because it initially started off as that. It's a very confusing, it's a very thin line between a craft and commercial beer. Where do you say that it's craft and where do you say it's commercial? I mean, I might have my opinion. I will not call it a craft beer, but someone else might say, no, it is still craft beer. It's a very thin line between craft and commercial. But if you ask me personally, I would say any bottled beer is not craft beer. As soon as you bottle it, you're putting preservatives, you're pasteurizing it, and also basically does not become craft. That is, again, my way of looking at it.
So is it fair to say that a lot of movement that we'll see in the industry in the next few years will be brands who use the entire craft brewing game or the micro brewing game to enter the industry? So... And build a brand name in one city, two cities, three cities, and then eventually scale up to be more, sort of go the bottling round, because that really gives you the scale, right? If you have that ambition of scale, you can't really reach through doing the kind of craft experimentation that you're talking about, right?
I would say, I would slightly disagree over here. I would say with now growlers being allowed and with different other avenues, so like, for example, you can have multiple growler stations across the city. So basically, what is growler? Growler is an indirect way of bottling. It's just that the shelf life is reduced. Like, for example, your bottled beers will last you 6 months. Once you sell it in a growler, it will last you 6 days, 5 to 7 days.
Got it. I see what you're saying. So there's a different way of scaling it.
Exactly. It's just how do you want to look at it? Like, whether you want that fast scale or you're ready to wait out, you're ready to open your own tap rooms, you're ready to open your own growler station, you're ready to do everything on your own.
Are we moving towards a similar structure? Like when I was in the US and go to any supermarket, you'd see 12 or 15 different brands that you would have never heard of these small sort of local breweries bottling and stuff like that. Do you see in 10 years down the line, we go that route, or is there a different model that you think we'll evolve into?
I don't see that supermarket model coming to India as yet, but you never know. I mean, if we go, I would say 10 years would be too soon for it to happen because the bottling in the US is a completely different process as in India. I mean, the licensing process to get into bottling is just a chaos. I mean, it's not that everyone can do it and not that everyone can afford it at the kind of plants that you have to have. Then there are different regulations in different states. Like, for example, I'm bottling in Maharashtra. How can I sell my beers to Bangalore? How can I sell my beers to Delhi? There are like different bottling rules. How do you pass all of that? Like today, there's only white rhinos only available in Delhi, Bangalore, and a few other cities. So how are you going to get that? How are you going to get your beers in different cities? How are you going to do your whole distribution network and all? It's chaos. So I don't know whether ease of business is going to come to that level that we can do it in 10 years.
Wait. You need a separate license for bottling?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Separate bottling plant. It's chaos.
When you're talking about beer, there are many different components of beer. You have your wheat, you have your hops, you have the yeast, you have all of these different components, and then you have the entire supply chain for beer. And now the reason I'm saying all this is because I'm now thinking about the entire opportunities that exist for a bootstrapped entrepreneur who wants to maybe enter this market. I mean, one obvious thing to do is that, okay, I could just become another craft brewing person, wait for 2 years, get my license, and I can start selling. But are there any other opportunities that you think exist for somebody who doesn't have the deep pockets of, let's say, a Bira to start a new company in this industry?
I would say like there are a lot of opportunities like in the whole, like for beer ingredients, as you are rightly mentioning. Today, there are a lot of ingredients that we actually need to import. Like your basic beer ingredients, a lot of it that we actually need to import because of the quality issues that are currently there. We don't get the quality of yeast and the quality of hops and all in India yet. If we're actually able to harvest that and get that actually in India, it would become a huge opportunity. It would definitely reduce our input costs. It would definitely improve jobs. It would definitely help the farming sector, and it would be a completely new business angle for someone. Like we try our best to use as many as local ingredients as we can, but after a point, there's only a certain amount that you can use if you want to maintain the quality of your product.
So tell me something. Is that not happening because India doesn't have conducive weather or the processes, or it's just a matter of somebody really putting their heads and brains behind it and making it happen?
I wouldn't say there's any systematic limitation to it. I would just say it's basically the regulated agricultural sector and people not willing. They don't know how much will actually people buy, whether they'll be able to get that exact quality that we as brewers want. You know, basically it's just a lack of information and the whole agricultural sector being regulated. I would say it's a combination of these two factors.
Going deeper into the opportunity space, right? There's opportunity in the whole raw material supply aspect, as you rightly pointed out. I am assuming there's also opportunity in just somebody consulting, building a consulting business off of this, of helping understand regulations and getting licenses and all of that. Or I'm also assuming there are people like that already out there.
I was just thinking about it, and I was thinking whether there's a tech opportunity that exists, but I can't really see a tech opportunity that exists over here. What kind of app would you make? I think this is a very physical product.
Yeah, even if you make an app and all, but when you're not allowed to do delivery, when you're not allowed to advertise, what will you do with the app?
All the problems come back to regulation. This is a very regulated space. Fair enough. Now, looking back, I'm very surprised that Bira got so much funding from Sequoia and all that, because all those guys are usually very afraid of investing in regulated spaces.
But I think by the time they got the funding, they sort of established themselves really well. Also, the guy who started Bira, Abhishek Jain, He had been importing beer for close to 7-8 years before he got into this business. So he really understood the industry and the regulations.
Okay.
It was very well. It was like, you know, like if you go to see even Bira, the original Bira, when it launched in India, the like for the first 6-7 months, it was actually, the beer was fully imported from Belgium. It wasn't actually made in India. It was actually completely imported beer. That's why you see the huge stark difference. If you had Bira in the initial days, and you have Bira now, I don't think anyone can actually drink that Bira right now.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. I completely agree with you. And it also went missing for 2-3 months in the middle. I remember people were stockpiling it. Pranav, the way we usually end our podcast is we ask our guests a couple of questions. And the first question I have for you is that, is there any content? Okay, this content could be in the form of a YouTube video. It could be a book. It could be a podcast that you would recommend to a listener to learn more about your space?
It's just about basic reading up on the internet. I wouldn't say it's just particular one particular book or one particular video. It's a combination of multiple books, videos, speaking to people. I would say the maximum knowledge you can get about the sector is only through speaking to people, because what you see actually, or like what you would read and what you would actually see through videos and all will just like get you tempted enough to jump into this. But once you actually speak to people and all, you will actually know what are the nuances of this business.
Pranav, what is that one thing that you're trying to solve for right now, either professionally or personally, that you've not been able to get to, but you know it's one of those pain points that you'll have to solve for at some point in the future?
So I would say, more from the business, I would say like now we are entrepreneurs, like basically we try and do everything on our own. Basically, we would like to learn how to let go and let other people also, like, you know, like since we started, it's just been Vedant and me doing everything. So now we've reached a point where we need to learn to let go and allow other people to do it and not get involved in everything. So I would ideally we are just learning how we can learn to let go, because right now we've always done everything. So we always want that level of perfection. And we know once you give it out to someone, you can't get that level of perfection. So how do you turn a blind eye to certain things? And also that's something that we are learning and would like to learn fast.
I agree. So a quick note on that. I think the first step of solving for that is obviously hiring. You'll have to hire people that you end up trusting. But before that happens, there's the hiring and training piece of it. We actually spoke to two entrepreneurs who've done this really well. I'll send you their podcast where they talk about, you know, hiring young talent and sort of training them enough to just then let go and let them make their own mistakes. You're on the right track in terms of thinking of you have to let go for you to now go on to figuring out the next thing, right? Figuring out the next sort of inflection point. If you keep doing the day-to-day stuff, you don't get the mind space to actually think the strategic stuff.
The podcast on that.
I think this is a lot of entrepreneurs' big issue is letting go, and that's the only way you can scale up.
No, I'm just saying exactly. We really need to do it, but how do we do it is still a question. We've hired, we've done everything, but that's still point of letting go and having the confidence is.
I think it's a combination. Yeah, Sahil's going to say that you just have to do it at some point, but you have to put in the systems and processes in place where I think it's more than anything, it's your anxiety that prevents you from doing it, in the sense that once I let go, what if something goes wrong? And I think that's where right kind of systems help you sort of understand that, hey, I can be on the back seat while still knowing what's happening without really bothering the person or micromanaging the person.
So that you don't know me well enough. I was going to say you just have to be lazy like me. As soon as you're lazy, you have to find somebody else to do the work for you.
Yeah, that's one way. Thank you so much, Pranav, for taking time out. Thank you so much for taking us through the insides of what it takes to set up a craft brewing business. It was great having you on the show, and good luck with whatever you guys do.
Thanks, Siddharth. Thanks, Sahil, also. It was for giving us this opportunity to discuss and have this candid chat together.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. If you liked it, please give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts.